Coming up on KUCB News, Coleman keeps her seat on Unalaska City Council, and Murkowski faces backlash over her vote on new Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Monday, October 8th, 2018. The sale of Penn Air to the company that owns the Raven Air Group has been approved. At a hearing Friday in Anchorage, Judge Gary Spraker signed off on J.F. Lehman & Company's bid to buy Peninsula Airways assets for $12.3 million cash. The attorney for the trustee overseeing the sale says that deal will likely take 1 to 3 months to finalize. During that time, officials have promised that service will not be interrupted. Penn Air is a regional air carrier that primarily serves Bristol Bay and the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands. It has been moving through Chapter 11 bankruptcy since August of 2017. Sherry Coleman has retained her seat on the Unalaska City Council, defeating challenger Vincent Tudiakov Sr. by 11 votes in last week's municipal election. After being too close to call on election night, the race's final result was confirmed on Friday by officials who canvassed 34 absentee and question ballots. Coleman attributes the close contest to her voting record over the last year, which was her first in public office.
One part is I believe when you stand up, you stand out. And so if you look at my voting record and you look at the things I've said, it hasn't really meshed with other council members. So I can understand where, you know, I might have rubbed people the wrong way.
Coleman has been one of the council's most vocal opponents to restructuring Unalaska's Department of Public Safety, a long contentious issue. She has also diverged from the majority on matters including whether to grant late applications for senior property tax exemptions. Moving forward, Coleman says she's taking her narrow re-election as a reminder to stay open-minded.
Because you come with your experiences and your preconceived notions on things, and it's important that you kind of put that aside. That is one thing I've tried really hard on, is to like focus just on the facts, what's being presented to you, what you hear from community members, and put all that together and then come up with a decision.
Coleman says she's also planning to reach out to Unalaskans who did not vote for her and ask them why.
Because you get really wrapped up in just your colleagues and your friends, and you get into this micro circle that you're not exposed.
The city council is expected to certify the final election results at a meeting tomorrow. In addition to Coleman's victory at council seat G, Alejandro Bongtongal has earned another term at seat F, while Carlos Tayag has won his first public office on school board. Both Tongal and Tayag ran unopposed and took more than 75% of the vote. With local elections over, Alaskans are looking ahead to next month's state election, when they will vote on a slew of races, including the three-way contest for governor. As KTOO's Andrew Kitchiman reports, that complicated race is keeping campaign strategists busy as they try to clear a path to victory.
Elections with two candidates are simple, but in Alaska's governor's race, there are three major candidates: Independent Governor Bill Walker, Democratic former U.S. Senator Mark Begich, and Republican former State Senator Mike Dunleavy. And while three is only one more than two, for political strategists, that extra candidate makes things a lot more complicated. Jim Lotzfeldt is an Anchorage political consultant who has worked with Democrats and other left-of-center politicians. He says it's a challenge for campaigns that want to go on the attack.
When you're candidate A and you attack candidate B, imagine it's like giving them an electronic zap, and some of those voters clinging to them fall off after they get zapped. And in a two-person race, those voters don't have anywhere to go but back to the person doing the zapping.
For Walker, any strategy that appeals to voters on the left or right sides of his coalition risks alienating those on the other side. He says his administration has been able to do what it sees as right for Alaska because it hasn't had to cater to the political parties. Here's a Walker ad with pipefitter Brandon McGuire.
When I look at Governor Walker, I see somebody who is going to make the tough decisions versus somebody who's worrying about their next campaign.
But a group backing Walker, Unite Alaska, is more combative. It has started criticizing Dunleavy in its ads.
When you vote for governor, will you choose a leader or a quitter? When Alaska needed it most, Governor Walker made the tough decisions. Mike Dunleavy? He quit the Senate, abandoned his constituents, and left others to do the hard work.
One group supporting Walker is the Alaska AFL-CIO, a labor federation. Joelle Hall is its political director. She says these ads will make Alaskans aware of Dunleavy's positions.
These are just perspectives and worldviews that the majority of Alaskans just don't hold. They view them as really, really extreme. And once people kind of figure this out, I just don't think they're going to think that he's, you know, not standing so tall anymore.
The strategy's been a little different for Mark Begich. Jim Lotzfeldt, who's worked with Begich in the past, says this year has seen Begich unleashed.
Begich is pounding away on choice and women's right to choose. And then the governor, who is pro-life, comes out and says, I'm pro-life, but my administration is kind of pro-choice. It's all fine. Why does he do that? Mark Begich.
Begich has made a straightforward appeal to Democrats and the political left.
I'm the only candidate who will protect the PFD and school funding in the state constitution, taking them out of the hands of politicians.
But Joelle Hall says Begich's stance won't appeal to Alaskans who are currently backing Dunleavy.
Mark has really tacked to the left, and so maybe that's not where most Alaskans are comfortable. Most Alaskans are kind of in the middle. So I think when they come off Dunleavy, they go to the governor.
4 years ago, Walker and Begich appealed to many of the same voters, but they were running for different offices. While Walker won, Begich lost re-election to the U.S. Senate. Now, they're fighting for the same voters for the same office. John Wood is advising the group Dunleavy for Alaska. He anticipates groups on the left will try to pressure either Walker or Begich to endorse the other, depending on their poll numbers.
The strategy is to try and get the public perception that one or the other, Begich or Walker, is pulling away from the other person. And that if they don't narrow it down to one of the two of them against Dunleavy, they'll both lose.
One sign of Dunleavy's campaign strength is the large early lead for Republicans in requests for absentee ballots. By the end of September, there were nearly six times as many Republican requests as Democratic. 4 years ago, that ratio was 2-1. Dunleavy's campaign has also benefited from funding from the Republican Governors Association through the group Families for Alaska's Future. Its ads have sharply criticized the Walker administration's performance, including this one.
Alaska's economy is last in the nation. Unemployment is nearly twice the national average. It's time for a change.
Another sign that the campaign strategies of Dunleavy and the groups backing him are working is poll results. He had a 15-point lead in results released last week by Alaska Survey Research. Begich was second, 6 points ahead of Walker. Libertarian candidate Billy Toyen wasn't included in the poll. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Meanwhile, in national politics, Brett Kavanaugh was sworn in Saturday as a U.S. Supreme Court justice, and the chairman of the Alaska Republican Party says he's shocked that U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski opposed that confirmation, vowing the party will have a, quote, significant response. Tuckerman Babcock says he'll leave it to the party's state central committee to decide what action to take against the Republican senator. Murkowski told reporters after the vote that her opposition was based on what she thought was best for the credibility of the Supreme Court and the country, not on politics.
There are consequences, but if I were to worry every day about political repercussions or somebody saying that they're going to run against me, or say something in a newspaper story, I wouldn't be able to do the job that Alaskans expect me to do.
Murkowski is also getting flack from liberals for participating in what's called a vote pair so that Republican Senator Steve Daines could stay at his daughter's wedding in Montana. Murkowski said she changed her no vote to present on Saturday to offset the yes vote that Daines would have cast if he had flown back to Washington. The final vote was 50-48 with one present. Murkowski says her vote pair did not affect the outcome and was a gesture toward civility that she'd like to see more of in the Senate.
Every little small baby step that we can take to be more civil and more gracious and more generous with one another makes us better senators and it makes us better human beings.
Murkowski is up for re-election in 2022. St. Paul Island recently hosted its Bering Sea Days science program, which has taught students in the Pribilof Islands about their environment for more than 10 years. KUCB's Zoe Sobel was there too to help students learn about radio and to interview the visiting scientists. This week, we'll hear some of those interviews produced by a group of middle and high school students. Here is the first one.
My name's Joshua Lynch. I'm an archaeologist, a PhD candidate at Texas A&M University with the Center for the Study of the First Americans. And I also work as a contractor for the military in Interior Alaska, working with the Center for the Environmental Management of Military Lands. This is my fifth Bering Sea Days, so I guess technically I'm also a Bering Sea Days presenter.
Why did you start doing Bering Sea Days?
I actually got into Bering Sea Days through Lauren Devine. Many of you guys know Lauren. We happened to cross paths in Fairbanks, where I live now, and Lauren heard a little bit about my research and thought that you guys would be interested in some of the archaeology and atlatl work that I do. So she invited me to come to Bering Sea Days, and I haven't been able to stop coming.
All right, what's the furthest you've ever thrown an atlatl?
A lot of it depends on the type of dart that we're throwing. So for traditional wooden darts, a throw of maybe 75 to 85 yards is pretty far, especially for the type of atlatls that we use. If you're willing to use modern technology, some carbon fiber, closer to like 150 yards. And when you're throwing things 150 yards in a park, you start to scare the people who are watching you practice.
What are you doing with the students this week?
I'll be working with the high school students doing a concurrent credit class between UAF Bristol Bay campus and their high school class here. We'll be making atlatls. Each person will be customizing their own. We'll be making darts for them to launch. And if you come by the community event, we'll have everybody with their finished products out throwing on the ball field.
Why is it important for young people to learn about science?
For myself personally, learning about science was a way for me to grow and develop. I spent a lot of time as a young person in science classes and studying for science-related fields and topics, and it really allowed me to do what I wanted to do in my career. So now I get the opportunity to travel, I get the opportunity to conduct my own research and to come to classes like this and teach. And I think science just opens a lot of doors for people, even if you're not interested in being a chemist or an archaeologist or a rocket scientist. I think a base knowledge of science is something that's really beneficial for everybody.
What's your favorite part of Bering Sea Days?
My favorite parts have been getting to know you all a little bit better. I have as much fun in open gym as I do teaching you guys the archaeology lessons that we do. So if you see me around, don't hesitate to stop me. If you already have my Xbox name, we can play Fortnite. Otherwise, I'll be in open gym.
That was archaeologist Joshua Lynch speaking with a team of young reporters from the Pribilof School District. They produced that conversation last month as part of the Bering Sea Days science program on St. Paul Island. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.